People ask, you know, were you scared? When I first got the ambush trigger, I mean, I hit the ground. I was scared. First time I've ever been shot at. And even though all the training I've been in and all the weapons I'd fired and the artillery I'd fired, to be shot at is amazing. And then to look around and see people who are bleeding, dying, dead. And you realize real quick that this is for real.
Harvey Barney Barnum served as a forward observer in the United States Marine Corps during the Vietnam War. Forward observers have one of the most dangerous jobs in the Army and Marine Corps. They operate ahead of the front lines and are tasked with analyzing the battlefield, locating Allied and enemy positions, and coordinating artillery fire support via radio. In this episode, Colonel Barnum recounts his experiences in the brutal battle on December 18, 1965. For his heroic actions that day, he received the Medal of Honor.
I wanted to be a Marine. My cousin was a Marine in World War II, and I can remember him, you know, in uniform. And my dad was in the poultry production, so he had a deferment, and then when it came time, everyone was going. He selected the Marines, and I remember him telling my brother and I years later the reason he selected the Marines is so he'd be the best trained, so that he could have a better chance of coming home to his two boys and his wife. But then they passed the age law a week before he went to Paris Island, and my dad, the people went through Paris Island with him, ended up landing on Iwo Jima. So I probably would have grown up without a pop. Initially, all Marines, you think of being an infantryman. And then there was something about the demonstrations and the firepower and of the artillery when I was going through a basic. And I was impressed with it. And so I started considering that, and because it was with the infantry, travel with the infantry. You know, that's so long ago, I don't know what really drove me to it, but I'm glad I did it. I don't think I knew about anything other than a Marine as a Marine until I started training and saw the various divisions, communications, supply, aviation, tanks, artillery. But the whole thing is, you know, no matter what MOS or military occupation, specialty that you were selected or assigned to, you got to lead Marines. And the challenges of leadership are there, where you're leading the mess kit repair platoon or a platoon of infantry. They all have the same, I mean, they're individuals. They're youngsters who, you know, you got to set the mission and set the timelines and give them guidance, step back, let them do it and give them guidance. I graduated from basic school, went to artillery school there at Quantico, Virginia. And part of the syllabus of being an artilleryman was, of course, the forward observer training. And in artillery, in the officer chain, one of the first jobs you get is a forward observer. You're a second lieutenant, and so you're formed up in an artillery battery. And there are four forward observers supporting the four infantry companies in a battalion. And that's usually where a second lieutenant starts out. And it's the toughest job in the artillery, because you're out with the infantry, you're humping with them. And after you've done that for a while, then you usually make first lieutenant, graduate up into executive officer or fire direction officer or up on the battalion staff. So most people in the Marine Corps and in the Army and the artillery start out as a forward observer. That's where you get your feet wet. The job of the forward observer with the infantry is the artillery expert or fire support expert with the infantry. A lot of infantry commanders are so intense on their mission that you really got to be a salesman. You know, I can do this for you. It's not all high diddle diddle, two up and one back, and you know. And you got to remind the infantry commander at times that he has this artillery, and don't wait till he's in a hum sandwich and then say, hey, Artie, help me. It's got to be part of the planning process. So I think it's a big sales job with the infantry. And of course, you're traveling with them. And I found when I was out with the infantry, a lot of times the commander would always say, hey, Artie, where are we? Double checking his knowledge of map reading, because that's one thing with artillery. You do get intensive study in map reading so that, first of all, you know where you are, and then you pick out your targets in relation to where you are. So that, of course, you know, if you call in a certain coordinates, and those coordinates go to the fire direction center, and they plot them on the map, that's where the rounds are going. So if you give them the wrong coordinates, you know, the rounds are going to go where you, the coordinates that you send in. And so it's very important to know map reading. And after you've been out with the infantry, you gain this respect from the commander that, first of all, you're good at what you do. And, you know, all an infantryman's got to be bailed out once, and he's a believer. The first thing that you identify a target, and you send in a fire mission back to the rear. And the fire mission has various elements. First of all, you identify yourself, and then there are methods of identifying a target, whether it's a shift from a target you've already fired, coordinates. You send in coordinates, or the observer target line from where you are out so many meters at a certain azimuth. So that those are methods of putting that first needle in the map for the fire direction center, and then you tell them the nature of target, whether it's troops in the open, troops dug in, a vehicle. Then you have various types of ammunition and fuse combinations with that ammunition. And then you stand by to adjust. One of the terms that people hear is, especially during a prep fire, is time on target. And that's when you have 5 or 6 or maybe 25 or 30 artillery batteries firing in a preparation. And you want surprise, so you want all rounds to land simultaneously. Well, there's a method of doing that mathematically, depending where the battery is, where the target is, and when you're going to fire the rounds, so that they everything lands within a couple seconds. And that's what the term that you see in the movies a lot, which is time on target, TOT. The thing about a forward observer, he is with the infantry. He's experiencing every single thing the infantry is. He's crawling in the mud, he's wet, he's cold, he's without food, without showers for a week at a time, he's miserable, but he is there as part of the team. And he just happens to be, rather than part of the fire team that's going to assault, he is there to support the infantry with artillery fire. And so he's part of the team. And I think people sort of forget about that. And you don't hear much about forward observers unless there's been a real big battle. And let's say they've been overrun, but the artillery pulled them out. The big guns pulled them out. So the infantry is the queen of battle. The artillery is the king of battle.
In 1965, Barney Barnum was sent to Vietnam and was immediately thrust into action.
I had been in Vietnam 2 weeks. I had been with this company, hotel company, 1 week, and was out on my first patrol. Got called back in to load up on a helicopter to go into Operation Harvest Moon. And 4 days into that operation, when we were ending it up, matter of fact, I hadn't called in any fire missions because we hadn't had any contact. But when my company, the battalion, was ambushed, it was the first time I'd ever been shot at. Number one, I've been in Vietnam 2 weeks, and people ask, you know, were you scared? When I first got the ambush triggered, I mean, I hit the ground. I was scared. First time I've ever been shot at, and you realize real quick that this is for real. And even though all the training I've been in, all the weapons I'd fired, and the artillery I fired, to be shot at is amazing. And then to look around and see people who are bleeding, dying, dead. It makes you realize that all that training. And I think it's like getting on a bicycle. you know, after years, you get on, you ride. You get in the car, you drive. I'd had the training, and you do what's got to be done. First of all, it was quite a rude awakening to be thrust into a, and this was a major ambush. But the first thing I did, when I looked up from underneath my helmet and I'm on the deck, I could see all these young Marines looking at me saying, okay, Lieutenant, what the hell are we going to do now? And the first thing I did with my radio operator and scout sergeant was contact the artillery. And we went into motion. Bringing artillery in. And we were at the end of the gun target line. You know, guns have a certain range, and they were firing into us. So we were really at the end of that range. And I couldn't bring the rounds right where I wanted them on a couple of the positions because they were a little erratic, especially at the max range. The round stability is not. So I backed off my artillery and only fired them from where I was and the battery. I didn't shoot anything over my head because we took some shrapnel on my position on the first couple rounds that came in. And the battery said we were at the end of the gun target line, max range. The company I was with was the rear element. I had enemy on three sides of me. So I fired on two sides of me. I didn't fire on the right side. But I was given some helicopter gunships that I utilized to fire on the right side, and the platoon that was the enemy to my right is where I launched a counterattack, while at the same time firing artillery back here. And at the same time, the company commander was mortally wounded, and he died in my arms, and I took over the infantry company. And so I'm now an infantry company commander and the artillery forward observer, so I have my hands full. About 120, I think, we had at that time in the company. We were the rear-end security of a battalion movement out of the mountains, and when the ambush was triggered, the North Vietnamese, this was the first time that in the Vietnam War, and this was 65, that a unit, a regiment, with shoulder patches and uniform and the whole bit we had come in contact with. And when the ambush was triggered, they were smart. They picked out that company commander of mine, you know, with a map in his hand and a radio operator behind him with that big whip antenna. And the first round that triggered the ambush hit him. Killed the radio operator and mortally wounded him. And maybe half hour into the battle, after I went out and brought him back and he died in my arms, I took over the company. So at that point, not only was calling in the artillery, but was running the infantry aspects of the company. And then I was given, as I said, a helicopter gunships, because fixed wing was up there, but it was overcast, and they couldn't come down. But those, and again, I got to be a forward air controller by directing the helicopter gunships. So, but, you know, it all goes back to... every Marine is a rifleman first. Every Marine officer is a lieutenant of Marines, infantry, platoon commander, trained at basic school. So all that training came in. And teamwork. And I was, as I said to everybody, I went from being a lineman that day to being a quarterback. I called the plays and they executed. And we won the Super Bowl. My company overcame 10-1 odds. And we did it as a team. There were no superstars that day. We did it as a team. And I tell you, I had to... They did anything I asked them to do, when I asked them. And if someone got shot doing it, then someone else was ready there to do it. And it just shows that teamwork overcomes... And I tell you, you get Marines, when they see their buddies shot up, and they're fired up. Survival is a strong motivator. And so we knew we had to survive, we had to come together as a team. As I said, we overcame 10-1 odds. I have to admit that I fired a couple fire missions, but then when I took over the company, I got pretty busy. And the fact that the artillery was at the end of the gun target line, my scout sergeant, my sergeant was there to adjust, he went out to help the company commander. He was shot 5 or 6 times. So he was unavailable to do the adjustment of fire. I was running the infantry and the counterattacks, and then the air came on. So the artillery, I sort of, that was my third priority at that point. The first priority was the infantry, running the infantry company. And then when I had the helicopter gunships come on, I had them right there, and they could fire at exactly what I wanted. You know, when you're in combat and you're directing, you're leading, you're not thinking about yourself. You're thinking about doing your job. And all these young Marines are looking at you, and they're ready to do something, but they're scared. And you got to point them in the right direction. Get them moving. And then you don't need a bullwhip on them. You just need some reins to guide them. And be out there in front of them. You know, it's not go do this, it's follow me. Support of the young Marine and the great corpsman I had with me. Leading by example, standing up and doing things. And using common sense. And if something didn't work, tried something else. You know, we didn't stop. We never stopped. And I had to make some tough decisions. And when I ran one counterattack to our right flank with a platoon, I had some people shot up. But I knew if I didn't do that, then they were going to get us. As a forward observer, you learn to control, especially in the Marine Corps, naval gunfire and air. And I'd had that training. In the Philippines, down at the Bonus Islands. I'd fired naval gunfire and fired air. But adjusting any fire support, whether it be a tank or a recoilless rifle or whatever, if you can identify a target, communicate with the shooter, give them the urgency and tell them you're ready to control it, then it doesn't make any difference whether it's an aircraft, a bazooka, a recoilless rifle, or artillery, and that's key. Now I had the gunships on the radio net. They were on the command net, which was superb. We had a 3.5 rocket launcher with Willie Peter, and I would mark the target, and I did that myself. I stood up there on the top of the hill and fired at the machine gun nest or at the line, and I think mainly because I didn't want to send some kid up there to do it. And I had the radio on my back. So I'm talking to the helicopters, and so I would mark around and then talk them in on it. When I ran out of the Willie Peter round or I had a misfire, I'd stand up there with my arms stretched and said, "Fly down my arms." And they'd line up on my arms, and they said, I see him, get out of the way. And they'd come. So it was fire support. And a forward observer is really the fire support advisor, controller, executor for the infantry guy. So, as I said, it doesn't matter what type it is, but that commander wants fire support. Well, I just happen to be the infantry commander and a fire support guy. And then later on into the battle, later on in the afternoon, we're running low on ammunition. We're cut off 500 meters from the rest of the unit. And the battalion commander says, "You've got to come out. We can't come get you. If you don't come out, you're going to be there by yourself tonight." I knew if we were there by ourselves tonight, it was all over. So I made some decisions. First thing I did is had the engineers blow some trees down so I could bring in helicopters to take out the dead and the wounded. And then I had everyone drop their packs in a pile, and we blew them up. And every piece of unusable equipment, we blew it up to make ourselves light for the breakout. And then I remember from basic training, you know, fire and maneuver, you know. So I started fire and maneuvering across 500 meters. And I knew that it was going to take forever and we'd never make it. So I got everyone together and said, "Okay, we're going to go in squad rushes. And we'll set up a base of fire. And one squad goes and they get across, the next one high-diddle-diddle. And if someone gets shot, you pick them up. We're not leaving anybody on the battlefield." That's what happened. Someone got shot. Two guys picked them up. And we just did. I never ran so goddamn fast in my life. But I was the last one out. And then when I get out, the first thing the battalion commander said to me when I got over there is, "Do you have everybody?" And I says, "I'll know very shortly." We made a count, and I did. I had everybody. The dead and the wounded that didn't get out on the helicopter, we brought with us. And needless to say, there was a couple supply officers when it was all over were a little upset that I blew up some of their equipment, but But we blew it up so that the bad guys couldn't capture it and use it. And the same with our personal packs. A lot of guys afterwards were complaining, you know, they had pictures of their wives or their wallet and stuff. And then someone says, hey, but we're alive. And in the fog of war, there's a lot of confusion, a lot of noise. And you sort of block it out. And you do what's got to be done. And you know if you don't do what's got to be done, then you're not going to be successful. As I said, survival's a strong motivator. And when you get these young Marines looking at you, and, you know, once I tried a couple things and they were successful, these kids do anything for me. And it was funny, the next day after it was all over, we're walking down out of the mountains, and there's four young Marines around me. I'm, you know, one in front, one in back, to the left and the right. And I says to the gunny, I says, gunny, what are these young Marines doing? They said, you saved our life yesterday. I didn't want anything to happen to you today. So they knew that, they knew what we were in, and we came out of it. And we came out of it together. And as I said, I was a quarterback. I called the plays, and they executed.
Must have been a nice feeling.
Well, when it was all over, and you think about the... it was kind of tough that night once we got into position to when a gunny brought the dog tags, and you have to write down the names and think about resupply the next day and what really had happened and how many people got wounded and that you lost and how close you came to. And there were bullet holes in my shirts and my pack. And so it was not my time. The good Lord had some other things for me to do in life. It wasn't my time to go. If you win, we don't need heroes. We just need teamwork and mission accomplishment. And, of course, in combat, you know, the best prepared win, second best prepared lose. There ain't no second place on the battlefield. So the best trained. So the other thing is we got to do the best thing to support the infantry so they can take the objective with least casualties in the fastest amount of time. And that's what the artillery is all about. There's no sense going up with a bayonet on the end of a rifle if you can sit back and hit them with artillery and then go up and police up the battlefield. And, you know, the other thing is with all the sophisticated technology and weapon systems that we have today, the linchpin to our success is that Marine or that soldier with a rifle and a bayonet that goes up and polices up the battlefield. And everything's in support of him. People forget about that. You know, they talk about how glamorous airplanes are and ships out at sea and all of this. But if it wasn't for the infantrymen, we wouldn't have a military. You know? And I remind young lieutenants that if it wasn't for privates and corporals, we wouldn't need lieutenants and captains. You know, I mean, it's a risky business. Anytime you're dealing with ammunition and guns, you know, if you don't do it right, then there are problems. I mean, they're designed to kill and maim. You just got to make sure that you control it so it's the bad guy that gets killed and maimed.
Barney Barnum received the Medal of Honor on February 27th, 1967, for conspicuous gallantry at the risk of his life above and beyond the call of duty.
I wear this and a half for 35 years for the great Marines and the corpsmen that I had the opportunity to lead on the field of battle that day, that either paid the supreme sacrifice with their lives or were seriously wounded. But if they hadn't done what they did that day as part of that team, we might not have been successful. If they hadn't, as I said, equating it to a football team, if they hadn't thrown the right block in order to allow us to go through the hole, to score a touchdown, to defeat the enemy, we wouldn't have won the Super Bowl that day. So as part of that team, they were very instrumental in us being successful that day. And as I said, when I was on active duty, every time I got dressed, wearing my ribbons, getting dressed, checking over in the mirror, I'd see that blue ribbon with the five stars in it. And I'd think of those Marines that were with me, and never forgot them. Didn't know a lot of their names, because I was only with them a week. But I remember what they did and how we came together as a team. And so I've dedicated this medal. I'm a caretaker of this Super Bowl ring, of this Medal of Honor, because it belongs to everybody that went shoulder to shoulder that day and showed the enemy what teamwork's all about.
After retiring from the Marine Corps in 1989, Colonel Barnum served as Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Navy for Reserve Affairs. In 2016, the United States Navy Arleigh Burke-class guided missile destroyer USS Harvey C. Barnum Jr. was named in his honor. Warriors in Their Own Words is our attempt to present an unvarnished, unsanitized truth of what we have asked of those who defend this nation. Thank you for watching, and by doing so, honoring those who've served. This program was produced by Evergreen Podcasts and Documentary.tv. I'm your host, Ken Harbaugh. If you've enjoyed this episode, please comment, share, and subscribe below.